folks, this is John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I literally record right here in my vehicle when I drive back from work as a high school instructional coach. You probably hear the cars buzzing right by, and we take every Monday about 15-20 minutes and talk about in heavy traffic just what the heck is going on in teaching and what we can do to make it better and finish our year strong, whether you're teaching virtual or hybrid or high flex or in person or some combination of socially distanced. We're here to help. New episodes drop every Monday. If you like what you're hearing, feel free to like or subscribe. Leave a comment. It does help other people find the show. If you want to hit me up on Twitter, I'm at MeehanEDU. And I have a website. It's EdrenalineRush.com. It's adrenaline with E, like educational ed, adrenaline. Because I'm fired up about teaching, and I want to share whatever I can and learn with whoever I can to get better at this, if we can. And I have a book. It's called Adrenaline Rush. It's all about game-changing student engagement. It's inspired by theme parks, mud runs, and escape rooms. All sorts of free templates available on my website. Use them, steal them, change them, do what you want to do. Like, we get better by working together and by leaning on each other. And today I want to talk about my other website where I work out quite a bit. It's called EMC2 Learning, which is a membership site for engagement engineers all over the world to come together and talk about ways not just to change the game in teaching, but to change the world. And specifically, we focus on student engagement and gamification, but I want to talk about those concepts today because today, it's not a commercial for the site. It's sort of a philosophical, you know, onboarding, if we could. Because so much of professional development is being told, you need to do it differently. You need to teach differently. You need to think differently. You need to grade differently. You need to have different types of projects, different types of assessments, different types of activities to get your students warmed up. Or the problem with traditional professional development, though, is that it's often given in a large, old-fashioned format where we all come in to the library or to the cafeteria, to the gymnasium or to a classroom, and we're talked at. We're talked at for like 30 minutes or 40 minutes by somebody, often a paid speaker who comes in and does a rah-rah speech. Hey guys, you got this. Now go get this. And sometimes you need that, you know, to kind of fill up your tanks. These inspirational stories about when someone was about to tap out, how they kind of kicked out and they came back in. Those stories do serve a purpose, and what I find in my own work as a speaker and an author and a consultant is when we show up, if we go too granular with, like, here's the how-tos, step by step by step by step, people kind of burn out, their eyes glaze over, they're like, this is a lot. It's the Friday before, you know, the quarter ends, or it's the first Monday after the quarter's over and you just put grades in. Like, it's a lot to process. And if you go too granular, I'll always ask when I give speaking, like when people book me, either for virtual events or for in-persons, I say, let's make this on a scale 1 to 10. A 1 being super, super granular right now, like brass tacks, step-wise. And 10 being like aspirational, pie in the sky, rah-rah. On a scale 1 to 10, where do you want this conversation, like where do you want this talk, where do you want this presentation to go? And almost without fail, every time I booked for large-scale events, schools ask for, like, a 7 or an 8. Because the truth is, in those large group settings, they don't really lend themselves to, all right, now everyone open up your workbooks. Now turn to page 17, and we're going to fill out problems 1 through 6. Everyone will fill it out at the exact same pace at the exact same time. And we'll wait, because it's a stepwise process, so you can't do step 2 after, you know, until you did step 1. And it ends up not making for a great professional development day. I get it. And so it's not a fault necessarily of professional development speakers or presenters. It is a fault of the system. And I am just as guilty of giving those presentations. And I'm like, okay, if you want a 6 or a 7 or a 7 or an 8, then I'm going to be a little bit more rah-rah, a little more aspirational, a little bit more pie in the sky. The truth is, if I took you under the hood of my gamified classroom or of a student engagement activity, I'd have to give you the full amount of instruction, just like I gave to my students. Hey, everybody, so we're going to do this assessment. It's called Thing X. Here are the rules of how we're going to do Thing X. Then we're going to walk through questions you might have, and we'll talk about how you're going to grade Thing X, and talk about the timelines for submission. That, in itself, could be 15 to 25 minutes. When I roll out a project, or I roll out an assessment, or I roll out a new, quote, game for my class, a new unit of activity, it's that first day of the unit, and it's, hey, everybody, come on in, we're going to live in the world of X. We'll learn how to play this game by playing this game, but really, we're going to set the task right now and do it. So the learning happens in real time. It's like how to teach someone a game of, let's say, badminton or Mario Kart. The easiest way to do it is just to put the racket in their hand or put the controller in their hands and say, just swing it, push some buttons, we'll walk you through the rules as they come up. Even if you've seen the game Exploding Kittens. Exploding Kittens is made from the guy, the Oatmeal. He's a cartoonist. When he pushes out his games, he says, for the instructions on them, he has, like, Unstable Unicorns and Bears versus Babies and Exploding Kittens, You've Got Crabs, a bunch of these creative, maybe off-color games. He says, in the instruction manual, he says, reading instructions is the absolute worst way to learn a game. Just watch the video. Here, scan the QR code. And it's funny because he's right. When you watch it happen in real time, you're like, oh, that was really easy. But stepwise, if you have to do it, how many times have you read the rules of a game? And it does kind of take the fun out of it because you have a question, but maybe that question isn't answered until page 3 or page 7. But you really can't start playing the game until you have everything read. And it can get overwhelming. So that granular thing is a challenge. And I back to the purpose of today's conversation. A lot of times in a professional development setting, we're given the rah-rahs and the, you've got this, now just get out there and teach better, teach differently, just be a better version of yourself, reassess, you know, reevaluate, reconfigure. But how? What does that look like? Like, on a scale of 1 to 10, maybe that keynote needs to be a 7 or an 8. But when you get under the hood, you need it to be like a 1 or a 2. Like, this is great, but what does that look like in a 3rd grade math lesson? Or in an 11th grade AP history class. Like, all of this stuff is moving targets. And I think it's important that as we offer stepwise, like stepping into the waters of whatever change looks like, there are different points of entry and different tools and resources available for that. So this kind of circles back to the purpose of, you know, why I'm almost half apologizing. Today I don't mean it to be a commercial for my site, but EMC2 Learning is a membership site, and we're learning on the fly about how professional development needs to be better. The vision for the site, very basically, is like, it's a one-time membership cost. You pay once a year, and you have a full year of access to everything inside the site. This includes a lot of templates. We have like over 200 templates for different activities you can use in your classrooms. But we also have videos, walkthroughs, step-by-step, that will explain how to use that pedagogy with screenshots and like demonstrations right there, like filled out versions of samples. That's helpful, super helpful, because like I said, the worst way to learn sometimes a new game is to read start to finish. So to see a video of that sort of thing in action, with like interspliced videos and clips of actual lessons or teachers who are making this happen in their classrooms, you can feel it, you can see it. In addition, on the site, we do have detailed blow-by-blow write-ups. Some people like lesson planning with the step-by-steps, and even though that's not a great way to learn a game, that step-by-step, like when you're done with step one, move to step two, if you get to move at your own pace, it is a great way to do lesson planning. Hey, this is a big picture concept. Watch the 30-second video to kind of explain the idea behind it. Now let's go into the brass tacks and boom, 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 really walk you through it. So those write-ups are there for every one of our resources. But we also have community events, and the community events last Thursday. Every month we have what we call a drafting table, which is we just get teachers together and we just bounce around ideas, kick around all sorts of suggestions from our engagement engineers, and that's what we call our site members. And I come from all over the world, so last week on Thursday night, Michael Matera and I made the site, and we curate it, we host it, we move our servers over to bigger servers because more people join it, and that's super exciting. And because it is a membership site, like there's a cost associated with that, we make sure that we are listening to the members of our site to figure out that they're getting their money's worth, right? They're getting their value's worth. And on Thursday of last week, we did what we called a game jam or a gamification jam. We invited users from all over the place. We had people from Canada, the United States, all the way down to New Zealand, just talking about their experience with gamification and like roadblocks they're hitting or stumbling blocks or obstacles or, you know, successes, because it's not just let's sit here and complain about all the things that don't work. Because what we're doing is we're building resources that meet the unique and, I guess, myriad needs of our community. But that community comes in a bunch of different experience levels. We talk about it at our site. We say we want to offer engagement at the speed of life. But that's not just the speed of our kids' lives. It's the speed of our teachers. It's the speed of our engagement engineers, right? Our community is coming in with all different experiences. And there are some who are diehard gamers. Like, they have been in the gamified classroom for multiple years. They have elaborate storylines and side quests and all these missions and these items and these badges and levels. And then other people are like, I don't really know what that is. Even something as simple as taking your class and dividing half of you guys is now the red team and half is the blue team. And you're going to do a worksheet, and we'll see which team has the stronger worksheet by the end of it. For many teachers, that's already a bridge that's very far. So giving multiple points of access, we're finding, is a really important way to do good professional development. And likewise, that's a great way to offer choice and variety in your classrooms. Because if we're modeling the PD differently, then hopefully And then teachers, because they've had it modeled for them, can do pedagogy differently, right? If it's, hey, not one size fits all, I'm going to lecture at you and talk for 40 minutes about this main point of this idea that you either read or didn't read this book, we're just going to do it differently. We're going to give modular, bite-sized, like, move-at-your-own-pace type tasks. And using that feedback from our engagement engineers this week, just with small, specific examples. I know it sounds in some ways intuitive, like, right, everyone's going to learn at different paces. Sure, if you're on a membership site, not everyone's going to go to, binge-watch the same series. That makes sense. If you're at a theme park, not everyone's going to hit the thrill rides. Okay, fine. But our goal is to get everyone comfortable wanting to go to those same series, because we think they're good series, to go to those same thrill rides, because we think they are thrilling. But that doesn't mean that everyone's going to feel comfortable moving there at the same speed, at the same pace. And that's okay. So we built out a series of smaller resources, and today I want to talk about what they kind of look like, to help get folks different points of entry, different, kind of like levers, which are designed to help you start to feel comfortable with increasingly student-centered classrooms. We've divided them into two different, like, product lines. So imagine instead of, like, a new TV show, it's a brand new TV series. And we keep releasing new episodes of those series, how's that for plurals, inside the site, like, every week. So the two lines we rolled out this week, which you'll start to see on the site immediately, if this podcast is releasing on Monday. The first one is we call side quests, and I'll talk all about side quests immediately. And then we also have this thing we call penny pedagogies, which I'll talk about immediately afterwards. Let's start with side quests. If you've ever played a video game, like a role-playing game, or a game like Grand Theft Auto, or one of those massive multiplayer online games like World of Warcraft, even something like Fortnite has some limited degree of side questing. Side quests are challenges or missions that you have the option of doing that help you, like, level up your abilities, your loot, your status. Maybe you get to collect different archives or different challenges that help you understand the world of the game a little bit better. I was playing a game called The Witcher, Wild Hunt, Witcher 3. And in The Witcher game, there is a game that, like, the main game is, like, you're a dragon slayer, a monster hunter, and you go around killing dragons and monsters. But that takes skill, it takes cunning, it also takes a whole bunch of armor and, like, weaponry. And so our hero, Geralt needs to level up his sword and level up his shield and level up his, ferocity, because these monsters get increasingly scary and increasingly big. So Geralt goes around town completing main missions where he's killing monsters, but also completing side quests where he has the opportunity to help a villager in distress who might have, like, lost one of their children, and then he has to find the child. That's what they call a fetch quest, right? Find the kid, bring the kid back. Congratulations, Geralt, thank you so much. I've made you this special potion to say thank you. And just like that, when you try that special potion, what do you know? Now you're 5 health points stronger. Or you meet a guy at a tavern, he's like, hey, are you interested in playing this card game? I think it's called Gwent. And we sit down and play this card game. It's like the game of, what's that one where you have to move your... It's almost like checkers or chess, but it plays with castles. Like, you flip over the castles. I'll think of the name of it. If you're listening to the podcast, you already know the name of it. But, like, you basically move cards forward or move playing pieces forward. And then as you land your piece on someone else's piece, you flip their piece over and find out that that castle was, like, worth 5 points, or that was, like, an archer or a catapult. It's a Stratego? Maybe it's called Stratego? Maybe that's it. Yeah. So, like, that's the idea. It's, like, this Gwent card game is an in-game mini-game. And the reason why video games use side quests is because the main quest will take many, many hours. We're talking 20, 30, 40 hours or more of the Slay the Dragons quest. That can get repetitive. It also can get scary because, not because it's like a horror monster is scary, but like daunting. Because it's like, I have to sit down and play this game for 40 hours? I'm never going to slay that dragon if I move at this pace. Because if you spend 39 of those 40 hours not slaying the dragon, or 199 of those 200 hours not slaying the dragon, there's very little in the way of accomplishment and forward momentum. So what side quests do is help you unlock different micro-credentials or micro-achievements. Oh, congratulations, you beat the guy at the card game, Stratego, or Gwent, and you've unlocked the ability to have an upgraded arsenal. So now instead of being able to hold 3 items in your clutch, now you can hold 7 items in your clutch. Hey, ain't that cool? When he says, come back and challenge me again, they ramp up the difficulty a little bit, so instead of playing easy level, now you're playing him at medium or hard. Don't look now, but every time you then challenge that guy to that game of cards, every couple of, days or weeks inside of the game, the level is getting harder, but only incrementally so. So you end up leveling up from 3 to 5 to 7 to 9 items in your holster or your inventory. And before you know it, you are really, really strong. That's cool. And that really, really strong helps make it easier to kill the dragons. That makes sense. The side quests do help flesh out the world of The Witcher, too, because you get to see, like, oh, these villagers. Oh, this town is under a siege from different monsters. I get it. That makes sense. I'm like, oh, I sympathize or empathize with my hero character because I'm learning more about the world in which he inhabits. That's good news. And then by playing each of these different side quests, whether they're fetch quests, like help the person find their lost child, or they're, you know, just time-based quests, come back in 5 minutes for this strategy. You're kind of killing time, grinding it out, doing some farming, right? Like, plant these things and come back in 5 days. And before you know it, you feel micro-credentials, progress, moving you forward and getting you deeper into the world of the game. That's a good thing. In a gamified classroom, then, using things like side quests helps students to deepen their understanding and enrich their knowledge of the world of your content. They're not traditional extra credit, per se, where it's, all right, everybody, we're going to finish today's class. By the way, extra credit is due Monday if you want to turn this in. Instead, these are optional paths that are available, and maybe only one or two students would try any one or two of these things. But typically, you would open multiple side quests at a time. So whether you wanted to help the fetch quest of the mom who's lost a child in the video game, or meet the tavern owner and play some cards in the back of it, it's different ways to deepen your understanding in, like, the world of the game. You don't get game, points, per se. Like, you don't get grades. Instead, you get, like, upgrades and the ability to unlock new things. So, for example, in a side quest in a classroom that's gamified, perhaps students can unlock the ability to have more experience points, or the ability to have, a 50-50 homework choice eliminator. On a test question, they wanted to cross off one answer. You can do that. Or they could bring in a note card to their class for the next test. And the note card is either a full note card, you know, 3x5, or it's like half, or it's a quarter, based on the strength of the individual product that they have done outside of class. Hey, you did some really good homework. You did some extra credit, and you did this side quest. You know what? I'm going to give you a full card that you can bring in as a secret power-up or advantage in our next, quote, game, or next level. It helps students to see that there is an immediacy and a reward for jobs well done. That's a good thing. Likewise, because they are extra credit, and they're sort of off-the-rails extra credit, not everyone does the same thing for 5 bonus points with 1 extra question on the test, but there has to be something creative. Maybe like, hey, I need you to build out of clay something that we've learned from this unit. That could be a DNA molecule, or it could be the setting of Huckleberry Finn. And when you've made it, I want you to film a short video explaining how you made what you made and why you made it. Simply by doing the work, students will have to do a ton of metacognition, thinking about why and what it looks like. Build this out of Legos, right? That's a pretty ambitious side project. How do you build parabolas out of Legos? Well, that's going to require a lot of creativity, a lot of side work, a lot of side hustle, side questing. And for that work, not only will the student lock in the learning that much more deeply, but hopefully they'll have a new in-game power-up that can come as a result of it. And like I said, a bonus point on a homework or the chance to do a choice eliminator, maybe the ability to, like I said, bring a note card in. Those are just some in-game examples, small ones. But Michael and I have started rolling out our side quest packs, and they are like germs of ideas, starters for you to kind of go crazy with. You can certainly scale them up and make them more ambitious things. Hey, we're going to do an end-of-unit product where everyone is now making Legos. That's awesome. You can certainly scale it up. But if it starts as a side quest, it's a great way to pilot. Maybe only 10% of any quest is ever completed by your classes, and it's okay. It's not meant to be an essential thing that everyone does. It's an idea. It's a kick around. It says, let's just try it. And then as you try it, you find that your 6th grade class is really loving building things out of capital blocks. Maybe that becomes a main quest for you in a later iteration or another unit of your game. That's a win. So we rolled out our first wave of side quests. It's like a bundle pack of 10, and they're all different germs of ideas and submission ideas to kind of reach that summit and become a stronger, better version of your classroom self and your teacher self. Again, different points of entry to kind of try it before you buy it. And you're like, this is not bad. I can get into this gamification thing. I can get into this student-centered thing. And it really helps get you into it. Our second product line we released is called Penny Pedagogies. And if you think about like pennies, like little coins, they're not worth much by themselves. Almost to the point where if you saw one on the street, it's too far away. I'm not going to go chase it down. But pennies stack up pretty quickly, and they can make real change. If you have enough pennies before you know it, you're sitting on a pretty sizable hoard or chest, and that's a good thing. Our penny pedagogies are likewise designed as everyone in class does these, like the side quests would be, but they're really bite-sized and small. So instead of a side quest where one student might build something out of Legos, a penny pedagogy might be, hey, here's a graphic organizer you may have never seen before. It's called the Frayer model. Here's how Frayer models work. Use this in your classroom in place of a traditional XYZ activity, and it'll take about 10 minutes, 15 minutes. We have two or three different ways you might be able to spin it up with downloadable templates. We're not in the worksheet business, right? We don't want to sell teachers pay teachers type products. Instead, we want to give points of entry that says, this is a different type of pedagogy. It's not a game-changing, a life-changing one. It's a penny, right? You know, there's nickel words and dollar words. This is a penny. But if you have enough pennies in your piggy bank, before you know it, you are a really strong, different teacher because you've made some real investment in change. Like that metaphors, right? And I think that's super cool. So whereas the side quests are maybe only one or two students in the class might ever endeavor through a single side quest, the penny pedagogies are a different way of looking at an in-class activity, whether that's a double entry diary, or, like I said, Frayer models, or things you may have never seen before that Michael and I have just been creating ideas inside of the site. We have this one we call Linking Logs. It is an awesome graphic organizer that works like a Sudoku puzzle, and it becomes really, really hard, like a game of Guess Who, but in reverse, and it forces students to do some real lateral thinking in three dimensions, which ultimately, just like the side quests, help them understand the world of your content that much better. So, whether you're using penny products, penny pedagogies, or side quests, you're becoming a teacher who is change-minded, and slowly but surely, you're finding out what works for your unique constituent of students. We keep rolling out new penny pedagogies every couple of weeks, and we keep rolling out new side quests every couple of weeks. So, before you know it, you don't have to do full-blown gamification, capital G. You might just play in these waters for like a few months and say, hey, my semester is infinitely stronger because I have students finding new ways to engage in the course content. That's fantastic. And then as you feel comfortable with a few penny pedagogies, level up to, you know what, I think I can do like a side quest thing. Or I can turn one of those side quests into my own assessment, and the whole class would. Or maybe I could theme out a whole unit, move up to something like a text quest, or a QR break-in, or an SOS, or a resource rumble. These more ambitious, more sprawling, more comprehensive gamification elements that you might have been scared of before, but because you've seen those changes start to stack up, just like the side quests in a video game give you that endowed progress that you say, hey, I'm not spending 199 hours not making change. I've seen real results today. That's a good thing. So we encourage you to check out the site. It's there with your membership under the heading of Penny Pedagogies right there on the main page, or underneath the gamification subpage. There is a full library of side quests, and we're going to keep adding more. We have dozens in there already and dozens more on the way between both these products, so we're really, really excited to see your thoughts. Please hit us up. Let us know. On Twitter, at MeehanEDU is me, or at Mr. Matera is Michael. We'll see you inside the site, hashtag EMC2Learning. And stay safe. Stay home. Wear a mask. Get these changes made in a way that makes you feel like you're making some progress. Because in a year that's been crazy for everybody, a little bit of progress is a good thing. To feel like we can come back to the school year and say, you know what, next year, I'm going to do this a little bit differently. Don't look now, but a little bit of different day after day after day becomes a world of different in 180 days. And that's a good thing for everybody. Because we can do it better, so we should. Anyways, that's it for today. God bless. See you next week. Back Monday. Thanks again.